Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I am Janine Vosper, and I have with me today Sally Foley-Lewis. Now, Sally inspires and skills managers to become high-performing, purposeful, and productive. Obsessed with boosting productive and self-leadership that ensures people reach their potential. Sally's presentations and programs positively impact the confidence level and leadership and results for what we're going to be talking about is people in middle management today. And multi-award winning global professional speaker, Sally has authored multiple books. Her book, The Productive Leader, received an endorsement from the renowned global personal development guru, Brian Tracy. When I read that, Sally, I thought, oh, I've got to ask more about that. That is very cool. The drive to support and skill managers comes from her own senior leadership experiences. Sally delivers presentations, keynote speeches, workshops, and coaching online and face-to-face to skill managers, boost productivity and self-leadership. And when I was reading through and finding out more about you, Sally, I sort of found out all of these different awards that you've won, and the list just goes on and on. The USQ Outstanding Alumni of the Year for Business Enterprise, AI Influential Businesswoman Winner, Most Inspirational Leadership Development Specialist Australia, Raw Success Awards, Silver Leadership Award, and that's just in the last year. So there's a huge list here. Congratulations on all of those awards.
Oh, Janine, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. My ego. My ego.
Very impressive, Sally. Welcome. Welcome. I'm so glad that we could do this. We had a good chat the other day in a little bit of a reverse position, and now you're here with me, and I'm interviewing you and finding out, your vast experience in working with people in that middle management role, but particularly, obviously talking about women here. I'm going to come back to more about you, but just something that popped in is there a difference between men and women in that middle management role? Look, we know the answer, but.
Yes, that's my evil grinning laughter kicking in there. And yes, there is. There absolutely is. Women really struggle with confidence, and that's time and time again, research after research, confidence comes up as one of the biggest roadblocks to a lot of things. And it's not just about getting out of middle management and into senior leadership. It's actually gets in the way of success while in middle management as well. So there are definitely differences between men and women, and happy to chat, and I could chat for hours on this, so but we won't. But one of the things that I just wanted to highlight is, you ran through my bio at the opening, and then you talked about some of my awards. Now, I will admit that sometimes when I'm hearing that, even though, and let's face it, I gave you that list, right? Let's not beat around the bush here. But even I cringe a little bit when I hear it being read out, because, that little bit of, and don't take any offense, anyone, please, especially if your name's Sharon, but my imposter syndrome chick is called Sharon. When Sharon starts to walk in the room, and so I've got to remind Sharon that I appreciate her showing up, but she's not really that welcome. She actually wasn't invited to this party. So, despite everything that it looks like on paper, everyone has a little bit of this going on. It's how we handle it.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a really good point, because people look at you and people give me feedback and go, oh, you're so confident in everything that you do. And, as if nothing bothers you. It's like, well, yes, I don't have Sharon, but I do love that you've got Sharon. I have the voice in my head of it pops in, which is usually now trained not to, but I give it a voice. Like, how can I pay attention to a Donald Duck voice? Really? You know, it doesn't have a lot of authority when that happens. So it's the same type of thing. It's just going, you know, that really, what authority do you have over me for me to think differently than that about myself?
I love that. And I love that notion of giving it a comical and cartoonish voice to minimize its authority. I think that's great. I think I might do that too. I'll add that to Sharon and give her a cartoon voice as well. And again, please, no one who's named Sharon, please do not take that personally. It was just when I needed to do this for myself in my own work and in my own journey, that's the name that popped into my head, and I had no one that I was visualizing at the time.
No, absolutely. And no offense to Donald Duck either.
Love it.
I know you've worked, and the bio said that you've worked in senior management roles, but who is Sally Polly Lewis, and what is it about what you've done in the past? Just a little bit more of your history, but also it's one thing going, well, I've done all that, I've worked in those sort of roles, but then to go, you know, I want to make a difference in people's lives who are in those roles. That's a big step. So I'll leave it to you, Sally, to use some background.
Well, thank you. And I think, not that I necessarily want to go back to day one, but I think my very first job and a major experience I had in my very first job set the scene, to be honest with you. So, you know, what was your very first job?
Car wash chick.
A car wash chick. Okay, awesome.
I was only 13, though.
What was that? Sorry,
I was only 13 at the time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So when you're, let's go beyond the part-time work, and but like, you know, when you were sort of stepping into that corporate-y more, or this is my career kind of one, rather than any part-time.
I recreated my career every 10 years.
Oh, fantastic!
Yes. So I was always planning and educating, and then as to what I wanted to be doing, what fitted into my lifestyle. I did change things around, but let's say when I stepped into a rep's role
So you're a sales rep. Fantastic. Yeah. My first job was 1992, which I know just carbon dated me, but I was a recreation officer in a psychiatric hospital. And, you know, not the usual kind of job you hear people say as a first time job, but that's what it was. And I was at the bottom of the rung. I was the most junior in the department, and which meant I had to do quite a few menial tasks that went with that. And that's fine. This was all new to me. This is like my very first adventure into adulthood and doing adulting things. And so I had to order all the supplies for the rest of the department. And back then, again, carbon copy book, carbon dated myself. I had to write the order in a book, sign it, because my signature was registered as the person to do the supply ordering. Pop that thing in an envelope, and magically a few days later our stuff would show up. Go on leave, come back, and I go to do the next order that is required. And as I'm flicking through the pages of the book, I see an order happened while I was away. No big deal, except when I looked at the signature, it was my signature. It had been forged.
Wow.
And that absolutely put me into a tailspin. And when I found out that it was my boss who flippantly said to me, what are you worried about? It was only for 2 litres of milk. Like just threw it away as if it meant nothing. And every value, every belief, every sense of safety, you know, there wasn't this thing called psychological safety back then, but that was the beginning of me looking for a new job.
Right.
It absolutely threw me. And the values that I thought we were sharing as a team went out the window. The voice and the things that I wanted to say, but this was my boss, and pretty much because I'm a smart aleck, anything that I would have said would have been very career limiting, you know, because I was angry and confused and upset. So I didn't know what to say, and people who know me well would be quite surprised to know that I was really silent. And I felt tiny. I felt worthless and invisible, and that I didn't matter. Yeah. And so to me, that was a major defining moment that had triggered this whole process and this lifelong learning to look at who are you? How do you stand up for yourself? How do you make sure that you're speaking out at the right time with the right words and the right tone, the right place?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you stand out for all the right reasons? And so that's, to me, that kind of sums up who I am.
Right. And it's interesting how something that other people might look at it and go, oh, that's just trivial, but it's a defining moment. You know, it's something where you go, who am I and what do I need to stand for in that moment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely. Because I went home that night and I actually went through, am I overthinking this? Because it is only milk.
Mm.
But then I sat there and I went, well, if she signs my signature for 2 litres of milk, what else is she doing?
Yeah.
And why did she have to sign my signature when she's more senior to me? Like, none of it made sense.
Mm.
And so I was doing this pendulum swing of doubting myself when in actual fact, if I was a little bit more mature, a little bit more grounded and had a little bit more life, you know, under my belt, I probably would have sat there and said, it's not about the milk.
Mm.
And I think we both know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's would have been, that probably would have been enough. And I imagine she would have made my life hell.
Yes.
And it still would have been the beginning of my last days there. And that's going to be okay.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's how many times do we wish we had said something and we've held back? I get the trouble for the opposite, really, is especially from, you know, he who lives in the house with me for the last 40 something years. Did you need to, you know, just walk away? Mm. And some things you can just walk away from. But when it hits your values and your beliefs in something, to be able to step up and do it with courtesy and kindness, but to be able to step up and own that voice. Mm. You know, that's why I have people come to me saying, I haven't got a voice. I want to find my voice. And that's what that means, isn't it? To be able to, in any situation, go, do I need to say something here? And if I do, can I?
And I think it's about, to me, values, voice, and visibility are the trifecta for self-leadership. And I believe a great leader has worked on their self-leadership. And that's something that, you know, that's something that's in my latest book. It's in the presentations that I'm doing around sparking your self-leadership. But when we're talking about women, and I know that that's what this podcast is all about, so let's hone right in. I think that here I am, a young woman in her very first job, and just had her values, voice, and visibility completely mashed up and messed up all in one moment. And I have to say now I'm really grateful it happened, because it helped clarify exactly who I am, what I stand up for, what I'll speak up about, and what I'll stand out for. And, you know, I saw that boss once on a train many years later, and she saw me. We're quite a distance away, which is probably a good thing. But I looked at her and I gave her what I call my mother's eyebrow, that all telling you're in deep trouble eyebrow. Boy, do I know that eyebrow well. But I gave her my mother's eyebrow and she knew. And we had one of those moments that when I know that you know that I know that you know. Nothing needed to be said. It was right. Yep, we're good. I got your number.
Yeah.
We're, you know. Yeah. And she turned around and walked away. And I just felt empowered in that moment. Mm. Because I read something, and I look, I'm not a genius in body language, but I read something that told me she still knows she did something wrong.
Mm. Yeah, interesting, isn't it? And even, you know, all that time passing, that it's still something that was relevant to her as well.
Exactly. And it's a, I would imagine that's a defining moment for her too, if it was going to be something that she was prepared to look into. But, mm-hmm. And so here's the thing for women, particularly women in middle management, it's not about always speaking up. It's about being really clear about what's the most important thing to say in that moment. And also being okay to ask questions that seek clarity for the team and ask questions that seek clarity for what's required. Because I think one of the things that we don't do is we don't ask a question for fear of how we'll look, but it's how we craft the question.
Yeah.
And it's how we then speak up and how we make sure and how we pre-frame some of the things that we want to say so that we're actually the voice of reason and the voice of calm, and we're actually providing a sense of safety and relief for everyone else around that table.
Now that's a good point, because often when someone does speak up, the rest of the people around the table will be thinking, oh, I'm so glad somebody asked that. I'm so glad somebody else clarified that, because it's a matter of, otherwise, if that you don't receive that clarity, then it's an opportunity for them to build up a culture of distrust when people will then walk away and go, well, that's not how it was meant to happen. Nobody explained that to me. We're not doing this. We're not on the same page. You know, all of those things that come up, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's where I think pre-framing works really well, where we say, look, I want to make sure that when we leave this meeting, we know exactly what we're doing. All the expectations are clear. So with that in mind, question, you know, and I think that pre-frame sets us up to make sure that it's not about making anyone else look bad either.
No.
You know, 'cause that could be what's on the other side of this. You know, when we think about confidence, and it doesn't matter what gender we are, when we think about confidence, there are three things that really dent our confidence. That's the fear of failure, the fear of regret, and the fear of rejection. And for women, the fear of failure is huge because it's so intertwined with that confidence factor. And so when we pre-frame and set a scene that says, you know, says this is the outcome I'm seeking, and then we can ask questions and then we can actually clarify, we do so with far more empowerment in our tone and in our voice, that we actually walk away from those experiences feeling more confident and others have more confidence in us.
Yes, and that's such an important factor as well when you're in that management role. And I know when I was GM for a company, it was one of the other than the owner of the business, one of the top managers in the business, but there were different department priorities, and there was a sales department, which I looked after. There was warehousing, and there was admin and accounting, and everyone had their own agenda in each of those. And that's the thing as well, isn't it? Is being able to get everyone to work congruently and figure out what the goals of the business is, and rather than, and this particular place became quite disjointed because of the agenda that one of the groups in particular had, and it was just it's not as congruent with the others. It really is a hard place to sit.
Sounds like lots of silos.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think if you're in management, one of the toughest things to do is to not trap yourself in your silo. Because you know, one of the biggest complaints that I get from middle managers is that they get pulled down into the weeds way too much and get stuck there way too long. And so, you know, as a middle manager, one of the things I think is really critical to do is learning skills like delegation, being really clear in our communication, clear expectations, using coaching, just to name a few, so that we can pull ourselves back out of the weeds quicker. And it's not like you're never going to be pulled down there. So let's keep that real. But, you know, we dive in, we dive back and jump back out up. And then we look to our left and our right, because really in an organization, the people to your left and right in management, the management team, you know, we always talk about a management team, but how much of a team are they, you know, because we're so siloed. And I think, you know, to your example about being so disjointed and the different agendas, if there was a focus on pulling that team together to understand what everyone had an appreciation of what each other's priorities were, if everyone had an understanding of what they wanted to achieve, then it'd be quite interesting to see what the overlaps were and where the collaboration could have been.
Totally agree with that. And so what happens, and I'll get you to talk to this, is when that disjointedness or the management is ineffective, or as you said, the manager gets stuck in the weeds, is it then becomes this greater turnover in a business, which is a very expensive exercise.
Oh yes.
And there's less productivity, you know, there's all of those things that can go wrong then.
Oh, absolutely. When we're stuck in the weeds and the issues that I think that you can see the knock-on or the ripple effect is that we get pulled down into the weeds because for a myriad of reasons, and it's not for the fact that a manager hasn't tried. So I don't want it to be an all in blame game. But what I do want this to be this whole idea of, am I delegating really well, and have I actually learned how to delegate? Because that's a fascinating subject in itself. Are my performance conversations actually focused on positive action? Am I using coaching properly? Am I making sure that my people are developing? Am I listening and paying attention to what's really going on? And am I missing out on opportunities because I'm too busy fixing and putting out fires when my team are actually presenting ideas to me? And so we get pulled down into the weeds, like you said, which triggers things like, I need to be in more control, which then triggers, well, I don't trust what's going on, which then triggers micromanaging, which then we have that, my boss micromanages me, I'm out of here, you know. And so you can see how everything has that ripple effect. And it's you know, it's not easy to pull out of it, but it's definitely doable, and it's absolutely worth it, because when we've got a highly performing team that are productive and happy, you know, happy employees are productive employees. When the team's engaged, then we've got money in the kitty to actually reinvest in things like development and new opportunities, because it's not being drawn away into turnover.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. What I've found is, and those businesses that are forward thinking and invest in training and invest in their management, invest in all their teams right across all levels, tend to be the ones that do keep their staff, that are successful. It's the ones that don't do that really do get bogged down, and things have happened so quickly over the last 2 years, and so many changes have come through that you really can't afford to get stuck. You need to be thinking about what's next.
Yeah, there's two things to that. You know, there's that old adage of, oh, but what if I train them and they leave? And well, what if you don't train them and they stay?
And they stay. I had my business say that to me one time, because we hadn't really been training the sales team well. We'd just been saying, here's your territory, here's your list, go and do this. You know? And one person we trained up very well, we spent ages, and then he went, oh, this isn't for me, and left. Exactly. That was the owner of the business, said the exact same thing to me.
But to me, that's the exception, not the rule.
Oh, it was. We started training people when I moved into the role a lot better, but yes.
Exactly. And so to me, if that happens, then there's an opportunity to explore the recruitment side of things and the culture of the organisation. If that person gets trained up and then says, this isn't for me, then there's a recruitment question. You know, and it's not about blame. It's just go, oh, okay, well, we've obviously not really looked at the style and the type of person that we're recruiting to make sure they do fit this particular role. So there's that kind of thing. I think that, you know, if you don't train people and they stay, then have a look at what's going on around your organization. And the other thing that I wanted to share, the second thing, was that I recently read, and I cannot for the life of me think of who they are, but it was partnered, I believe, with Deloitte Economics, that for every $1 invested in learning and development, there was a $4 something plus ROI, return on investment.
I'm going to write that down. That's very beneficial for us coaches, isn't it, to have those?
Well, to me, that says a lot. But to me, there's fine print to this.
Yeah.
Okay. Because there's training and there's training. And you can send someone off to a one-hit wonder workshop, which can absolutely transform someone and get them re-engaged, invigorated, they're kind of come back. But then as their manager, how are you going to help that person sustain that? That's one thing. The other thing is the type of training that you set up. Is it the right training for that person? Is it the right method of delivery? Is it actually a workshop, or is it on-the-job training, or is it coaching, or is it something else altogether? You know, to me, don't look at L&D or learning and development as a training workshop. No. Look at it as a broad spectrum of opportunities that help re-engage, skill, motivate your employees. Because then you're going to get more than $4 back. You know, you're absolutely going to get more than $4 back. I do a bit of work where we do the return on investment, and there's been hundreds of thousands of dollars ROI on an engagement that would have been a few thousand dollars.
Oh, look, it undoubtedly makes a great deal of difference. And I know I did some communication training last year for this particular company, and I was given the brief from the management as to a couple of issues. And so they sent along everybody, though. And they were a bit reluctant to all turn up. But then after the first, there were three sessions. After the first session, then nobody wanted to miss the other two sessions. And there were lockdowns and there was sick people and there was all of these things going on. So we just had to keep pushing the dates out because nobody wanted to miss the next two sessions. They wanted to continue with some more training because they thought it was of high value, but the management was then reluctant to do it. But I think part of the problem was the management weren't doing the same communication as had the same skills then, or learnt the same skills as the team had. So it's a two-way thing too, isn't it? You know, it's very much so. It's not just let's train the managers to do this or let's train the staff to do this. We need to have it right across the board, but with different priorities.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot out there on offer for executive leadership, senior leadership coaching, and which is great. And there's a whole lot of training for operational staff, but where is that middle management? And this is where I specialize in. And obviously I deliver a whole range of experiences for middle managers, but that's why I stayed in this particular area, because I think that, you know, as a middle manager, you have got so much power and so much opportunity to influence the people that are directly facing your customers and stakeholders. And, you know, you do have an opportunity to influence decision making up the line as well. So to me, middle managers are in a pretty powerful position. And it's interesting that, you know, that I think it's fantastic that the delegates that came to your training realized how good it was and wanted to stay. And it showed then that there's an opportunity at that middle level as well. Mm-hmm. I want to share with you that I was contracted to deliver leading self and others through change for a major Australian brand. And it was for middle managers. So I'm in the room, and this just goes to show how we can't just throw workshops at people. So I'm walking into the room, and there's about 13, 14 people, and we start the program, and then there's just something, you know, when you get that spidey, something's not right, my gut's churning. And I said, okay, I just want to just say, look, this is a safe room. The door is shut. I just want to just ask, what am I missing? What's going on that I'm picking up on? And please know that this is a safe room and you can say anything you want and we can handle and deal with whatever we got to deal with the best way we can. So just give it to me straight. And one of the gentlemen said, we don't quite know why you're here doing this when we've all had our pink slip. And I said, oh, I did not know that. And so, you know, these guys have been sent to training to lead themselves and others through change. Talk about change that they're about to get. Given the pink slip.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, it's to me, when we think about how we can empower middle managers, it's really about making sure we're looking for the right development at the right time that's going to get the right outcome. And that swings back to them. You know, does that development also help ignite or amplify confidence and courage and influence, which is what we all need?
Mm. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. They obviously booked the training well before they.
No.
Really?
No. So just so you know, I dumped that topic and I just said to them, well, if you're all going, do you want to not worry about this and do you want to chat about CVs and your LinkedIn profiles and, you know, interviewing skills or anything like that? And they're like, do you do that? And I said, I've done a bit of it. I'm pretty good at it. Would you like to have a chat? I've been a CEO. I've had to recruit.
Yeah.
And they're like, do you mind? And I'm like, nah, let's just do that.
Good on you. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. What would have been the sense of continuing on with something that was, it may have been a value into the next role, but maybe you don't know, whatever.
Not with the culture, not with the, there was no way that was going to land for them. It was a complete and utter waste of their time and a waste of money. And so I'm glad I kind of broke the rules to serve the people in the room, you know.
Look, and this is one of the most important things when, ever, you know, if I'm coaching in sales or you're having a sales conversation, then you serve the person that you're in front of. It can't be this cookie cutter type of thing that you're saying or you're presenting or you're pitching. It's the same when you're standing in front of a group of people and running a workshop or a training session. It can't be a cookie cutter. It's the most important people in the room is your audience, whether it's one or 1,000, and you've got to deliver to what they want and not what you want to do and what you want to say. That's such a vital point.
Yep.
It's not a bit off track with the middle management, but as trainers, we both know that that's such an important point and others don't do that.
And I think, well, the lesson there for middle managers is then, you know, being present.
Mm.
You know, when you're a manager, and I know you've got 27,000 tabs open in your head, when someone sits sitting in front of you or they're, you know, on Zoom or Teams with you, do your absolute utmost to be present, because then you can actually adjust, you can serve, you can be the coach, you can give the answer, you can challenge the assumption, because you've got more clear presence with that person. And that's where I think that is a value for middle management.
I think it's one of the most important values. And it was not, I do know it was something I didn't do that well. I could listen without paying attention, but paying attention was more important. And so I could be doing something else and still listening. And I think a lot of people think that they can do that as well. But the paying attention is is the value for people. And it took me a few years to learn that, because as you said, you're busy doing something else while somebody's speaking with you, and you hear them and you go, yeah, fine, we'll get that organized. But it's the paying attention that makes it, gives people that sense of value and respect.
And being heard. They know it's the visual cue to know that they're being heard, despite whether you're hearing or not. Yeah, for sure. It's a good pickup.
One of the things that I come across with women in management roles is two things that we hear of all the time. One is this imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be here. Who am I? And the other one is the glass ceiling. Now, I know that's changing ever so slowly, but it's still very real, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's glass ceilings and there's glass cliffs.
Glass ceilings and glass what?
Cliffs.
Okay.
So a glass cliff, if you're right with that, I just misdirect you a bit there, if that's all right. So a glass cliff is when there's something that's potentially coming down towards an organization, or there's been a big issue that needs to be resolved. And what happens is the senior leaders go, oh, well, who can we give this to fix this? Or who can we give this to, because we know it's going to blow up?
Mm.
And so they put that person on a glass cliff. And I remember reading, it's quite a while ago now, but I remember reading an article saying that more women than men get put on a glass cliff.
That is so true. I just finished reading a leadership book the other day, and they gave an exact example of that. And this man, he offered this position to this senior lawyer in this business, and she took it on because she's busy and can do everything, and then realized that she couldn't do this and went back to him and said, no, I can't do it. And she said, how come you didn't do it? And he said, because it's something that it's going to hit the fan, and I didn't want, and I knew I was too busy and couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
And she was busier. And he said no, but she said yes.
Yeah, precisely. And it's not actually about saying no all the time, because it might be something you're a specialist in and you can turn it around. Mm. But then it's about making sure people know that you're the one that turned it around and no one else steals your credit.
Mm.
And no man or other person, because men and women can do this, not just men. But it's about making sure that the person who put you in that position doesn't steal the credit for you doing the work.
Mm.
They get the credit for selecting you.
Yes.
But you did the work.
Yes.
And then the second thing about that is, asking more questions before you say yes. Don't rush to say yes. We rush. You know, we often say yes because we feel like we can't say no.
Mm-hmm.
When in actual fact, they need to be, I think, particularly women need to say, tell me more.
Mm. Yes.
That's it. Just tell me more, because that doesn't, that says to the other person, oh, she hasn't said no yet. Whereas you're sitting there going, I haven't said yes yet.
I haven't said yes yet.
You know, so tell me more. Mm. You know, what do you propose is going to happen? Why is this being addressed this way right now? What do you think are the strategies? What are strategies have already been discussed?
Mm.
You know, why do you think I'm the right person for this? You know, so and these are questions that you can absolutely ask, mm, because it puts them on notice in, mm, a very respectful way.
Yes, and it means that if you do say no, there's reasoning behind it without being an excuse.
Yeah.
It's about, that appears to be more valid reasons, yeah, than you trying to, then that takes out guilt then, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. And we've got to remember that no is valid.
Mm.
And we can say no. This is why I'm saying no, and the reason, you know, this is my singular reason why I'm saying no, but thank you for considering me. I wish you well.
Mm.
Have you asked such and such?
Mm.
Don't go in the, oh, I'm so sorry. And
yeah.
No, it's no, this is why it's no. I appreciate that you considered me. Have you thought of this person?
I had that many, many, many years ago. I was running a school fete and I asked somebody if they could do something. And then she gave me this beautiful answer. And it was like, I'm so glad that you respected me to ask me if I, you know, to do that. And unfortunately, I won't be able to do that at this time. But I do really, I'm very glad that you thought of me. And I walked away thinking, I think she said no.
The nicest rejection I've ever got.
It was awesome. I used that one as an example.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And a reference since.
How you love the person despite the fact they just dumped you. Yeah.
Correct.
That's what it's about, isn't it? It's, mm, I mean, I think what happens is when we talk about being direct, we often misunderstand that as being rude or, mm, aggressive, when that's not what that means. Look up the word direct. Because we can still be direct and say please and thank you.
Mm.
The two are not exclusive, and, you know, they can go together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a very good point for people to, that all of that is a very good point for people to recognize that there can be a no in there. You don't have to. And I think women are the worst for setting those boundaries for themselves. I think they're,
oh, yeah,
sort of just jump in. And so, yeah, that's the glass cliff. The glass ceiling is that we, you know, people, I think, understand what that is. So that is that still something that you come across?
Oh, for sure. And I think one of the biggest things that gets in the way of a glass ceiling is that there's this competition to rise to the top. You know, we still haven't got pay parity. Look, and equity and, you know, diversity and inclusion, these topics are huge, and I'm no expert in that particular area, but if anyone thinks there isn't any glass ceilings anymore, they're kidding themselves. They are still there. And I think one of the biggest things that as a woman in middle management that you can do for yourself is actually focus on your self-leadership and start with understanding your value and your worth in working on your emotional intelligence.
Mm.
Because when you have got solid, good quality emotional intelligence, then you're going to be more resilient. You're going to have more positive self-talk. You're going to be able to bounce back when people reject you and when your ideas are rejected, and not be too thin-skinned about it. And I'm not saying don't ever be sensitive. That's, mm, that's never what I'm going to say. Mm. But it's about bouncing back from that. You're also going to have a lot more agency for yourself, which means that when you've got really good emotional intelligence, you're going to have a bit more courage and confidence in yourself to pitch your idea in a way that is going to have a greater chance of being heard around the table, the metaphorical table. So to me, any woman that wants to try and break through a glass ceiling, you know, and can see that there's a ceiling there, and they're everywhere, really. Start with your emotional intelligence. What is it that I can work on for myself that's going to give me more confidence and more courage so I'm more influential and I can break that glass ceiling?
Oh, and that is just so important, isn't it? You know, I find this with training, when I'm running, you know, individual training sessions where individuals come along to a group, the women, every time they're thinking about the expense, it's an expense, and they're going, is this of value? Goodness, the kids need to go on a trip to the snowy mountains and husband needs a new mower or whatever. There's all of those things that are going through their mind. Whereas when I talk to a man about it, they'll go, how much? Here's the money.
Yeah.
They see the value, and it's that seeing the value in yourself. It frustrates me no end, because knowing that you've got, you're worth it, that you're worth, especially, you know, I'm thinking about professional speaking at the moment, and that's something that, you know, you're aware that I coach, and we talked about this the other day, that was a 15% more chance of getting a promotion if you can speak well.
Yes.
So if that's not your forte, invest in that. If the confidence isn't, invest in that. If it's, you know, learning more skills to have a high EQ, then invest in that. But don't ever see it as an expense. It is an absolute investment in yourself.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and I've been a facilitator, workshop trainer, you know, for a long, long time now. I don't want to give away just how long, 20 years, but we'll just gloss right over that. you know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've actually enrolled this year in a certificate in facilitation and instructional design, because I want to go back to the basics and what's out there now. What have I forgotten? What's fresh? What's new? You know, so, you know, I could quite easily get quite inflated about myself when I look at my CV. But the reality is, we're only as fresh as what we invest in ourselves. And so that's my thing that I'm doing. Even though I love what I do, I'm constantly looking for ways to make it better and do better. And this is one of them this year. It's a big investment, and I'm absolutely so glad I'm doing it.
That's great, and that's such a positive thing. I know for me, I look at the beginning of the year, I look at what's extra skills what I had by the end of the year. And then I plan on how I'm going to gain those skills. So it may be that I might need a mentor in a particular field, or I need to attend a course, whatever it may be, but that's the investment. I usually do it as a personal thing as well. So if I play golf and I invest in a coach to help me get better at that, but also within professional development, and easily have spent a few hundred thousand dollars on getting good at what I do.
Yeah, I love that. And I think for women that are professional women in organisations, particularly middle managers, because that's, you know, I'm always going to go there, but anyone really, think about the last time you had a performance review with your boss. And everyone loves those, you know, let's just get out the piece of paper and do the tick and flick and really not care about you as a human, she says cynically. But maybe you actually had a decent conversation. And if you do have good performance conversations, then I'm ecstatic that happens. But let's face it, the majority are not that great. So this is where I want everyone to take responsibility for themselves and think about the perception that others have of you. Is in that performance review. It's only a perception. It's someone else's truth about you. Mm-hmm. And so take a moment to reflect on, if that's how they saw you perform, ask yourself, how true is that most days? Mm-hmm. Or was there an incident that triggered that? What was going on that leads that person to think like that about your performance in a particular area? And a real common one is about a lot of middle managers often get, well, you need to delegate more. So really stop and hone in on that and say, okay, is this actually because I don't know how to delegate, or what's really getting in the way?
Mm.
And if you take half an hour, and that's it, half an hour with a cup of tea or cup of coffee, and really reflect on what is the sticking point, then that's what you work on. It's not thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to transform you completely. It's actually, oh, maybe I need to do a bit of confidence coaching, or maybe I need to do a workshop in delegating.
Yes. And that's, and it can be, that's exactly right. It's just those individual skills. How can you hone that or pick that up? Or yes, you know, I totally agree.
Because when you do that, sorry, just when, because when you do that and you do that well, you come back and implement.
Oh, yes.
And you do that well, your confidence and your influence and your courage goes up.
Mm. Yeah. The implementation is the important factor. It's, so many people do a lot of courses and then just don't apply the skills that they've learned. And or I know I a few years ago I had a coach for 12 months and we got weekly sessions and got homework every week, and I would diligently do the things, and it was all way out of my scope of things that I was comfortable with. It was setting up a lot of IT things, which is way out of my scope. But I did it because of the investment and the skill I wanted to have at the end of it, and not just, you know, let it go. So, it's absolutely important to implement it and do it.
And one of the things you could do is actually, instead of waiting for the boss to say, how is that, how can I help support you, you go to the boss and say, this is what I've learned, this is what I'm going to work on this week, can I meet you in a week's time and you check my accountability on this? You tell them how you'd like to be held accountable. When I'm working with middle managers, what we often talk about and what I share with them is that, particularly in performance conversations, when you're just checking the commitment to the action and you're trying to wrap up that performance conversation, what I really encourage middle managers to say to their staff is, how would you like me to help you stay accountable to do this work? Because as a middle manager, we often think we have to know everything, including how to do the accountability. Whereas if we ask, then the onus is on the employee to say, I actually got to do this. Okay. Well, maybe if I meet you next week and we talk about this, brilliant.
And coming back to that individual. No, that's really important. Oh, Sally, our time has gone very, very quickly, as it always does in these conversations, because I just love hearing, you know, from experts who of the things that you love doing, and you can tell that with what you, how you're talking about. There's so much knowledge there, but there's also so much passion in what you're doing as well. If we had three takeaways, what would that you want them to be for the people listening?
If we had three... Give your imposter syndrome either a voice or a character, and talk to them and actually invite them to go. Like, really talk to them, because what that does is it separates them from you. They become their own entity. The imposter is not you. And then you can actually then kick them to the curb and tell them to get out.
Love it.
That's one. And I love the Donald Duck voice. So Sharon's going to have something. I'll come up with a character for my Sharon.
It could be that really high-pitched. Who was the female comedian that did the Greek?
Effie.
Effie Sharon. That would be funny.
Oh, bless. Love it. So giving your imposter syndrome some sort of moniker or identifier that's not you helps you to separate that out. The second thing is take the time to understand yourself more. So really dive into anything around your self-awareness, your emotional intelligence. That is going to be, it's the difference between building a house on sand and building a house on foundations. You know, if you build a house on sand, how long is it going to last? Whereas if you actually build, the piers go down, the foundation and the Rio and or whatever else they do, not being a real house builder. But, you get my metaphor.
I do.
You know, you're going to have the ability to believe in yourself in far more sustainable ways, in far more resilient ways, in far more confident ways. And the other thing is, don't rush to say yes. Don't rush to be the people pleaser. You know, it's not about saying no, because it might actually be a fantastic opportunity, but don't blindly say yes just because you think you have to.
I love those questions that you gave the example.
Tell me more. Tell me more. Start with, ooh, thank you for thinking of me. Tell me more. Start there and then listen to what's being said, and just check where your emotions are going when that person is talking to you. I know that when someone rings me up and says, Sally, we'd love you to be the opening keynote speaker for a conference with 5,000 people, I'm like, on the inside, I'm absolutely going nuts on the inside, and I've got to pay attention to my emotional state. Because when our emotions are high, our logic is low. So then I've got to work hard to go, all right, Sally, let's just chill down, calm the farm, tell me more. Oh, of course I'm going to say yes, but I need to understand. I need to understand, what do they want me to talk about? How long do they want me to speak for? Where is it? You know, you've got to ask those clarifying questions so that from an organizational perspective, as a middle manager, you're not standing on the edge of a cliff, or you're not being held under the glass ceiling.
No, they're all extremely good points. And even just taking that away, that tell me more, I think that's a brilliant takeaway. Sally, how can people find you, and what's the sort of, have you got any offers or things happening? This will go that June, July, so there might not be something specific, but if people want to work with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Oh, just Google my name. There's only one of me, and many people will say, thank goodness there's only one of you. So Sally Foley Lewis, if you Google that name, you will find me on the interwebs. And depending on when this goes out, of course, one of the things that I'm absolutely obsessed with right now is really helping middle managers get the support and development they need that isn't about fitting into any other organizational type of ranking, like not trying to get a middle manager to go to something that's super senior executive, and not getting a middle manager to sit in on an operational opportunity. So I'm actually pulling together the middle manager's online muster, which is all about, it's 3 days, it's free, it's online, and I'm hosting 20 something speakers, experts, who will dive into a whole range of topics that are essential for middle managers. So that's coming up on the 2nd to the 4th of June. So I don't know if that time's in.
No, well, we'll probably miss that, but I think it's an amazing, it's a great idea to be able to pull people together like that. And I'm sure it won't be a once off.
No, this is the inaugural, so I'll be on every year. And I do believe, Janine, we might be having you next year.
Or let me think about it. Tell me more. No.
Well done. Love it. Yes. Yeah. So just Google my name. You'll see me there. I do presentations and workshops and coaching. And
And now the places are open again. Sally, guess what? You can go back to doing keynotes and conference speaking.
Absolutely. Cool, I could do conferences from a real stage rather than this stage here. Great. So actually, one of the things that might actually be quite helpful is I am certified in emotional intelligence certification. So if anyone is really interested in diving into their emotional intelligence and really developing that more, you can look me up and we can do an EIQ2 assessment and a debrief. So that's something that might be really worthwhile. I do a lot of that for teams and management teams, and it's not exposing anyone's emotional intelligence to anyone else, but everyone does their own assessment. Then we talk about emotional intelligence, and then people can ask questions and clarify things, and we talk about what the assessment means. And if you scored high, what then you should be working on, or if you scored low, what you could be working on, and really creating a development plan around that. So the emotional intelligence is something that I find a lot of management teams value quite
well. Absolutely. I remember doing the test many years ago. It's been a long time since I've done that, but yeah, it was highly valuable at the time. That's wonderful. Will people just email you for that, or is there a separate link that
Just email me. You can get in touch with me on email, sally@sallyfoleylewis.com. Or if you do find my website, which is, guess, it's sallyfoleylewis.com. Just Google my name. You'll find me. There's a contact form on the website. Happy to have a chat, see what works for you.
Oh, no, that's terrific. I think, and that's a great offer too, and very generous. So hopefully we've got some people that will take that up. Sally, thank you so much for sharing your expertise. And I think we could have kept talking for quite a while longer. We would have found another 30 subjects that we could have highlighted on or focused on. We've certainly covered quite a few in this interview.
For sure. Thank you, Janine. Loved chatting with you.
Thank you. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Remember, if you love it, subscribe, leave a 5-star review. And if you are not sure about where you're sitting in your life or your business at the moment, you can always book a strategy call with me at JanineVosper.com and just go in 20 minutes. It's all free. And we're going to have a conversation. And the thing is, if I can't help you, I have the most amazing group of experts out there that I've made contact with that I can recommend somebody for you. But have a fantastic day wherever you're listening to this from. And I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the We Are Women podcast. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.